Greetings. Just a short comment to tell you that we decided not to use professional producers, announcers, etc. in the making of this CD. We did so to keep costs down so that more people could afford to buy and enjoy this unique segment of radio history. Accordingly, the commentary will be more like an informal ham radio QSO than a polished radio broadcast. The recording you are about to hear is an authentic copy of the SOS signal sent by the famous ocean liner Titanic as she was sinking in the North Atlantic on April 15, 1912. Yes, there were recording devices in those days, but they were rather crude mechanical machines that used acoustic rather than electrical amplification. The fidelity was rather poor, but it was sufficient to adequately reproduce the human voice and, of course, the dots and dashes of radio code. If you listen carefully, you will hear, at the start of the recording, a man's voice saying 1912 to indicate the year. The original mechanical recording was made at Port Race, New Jersey, at one of the Marconi Company shore radio stations. After Marconi perfected his invention, he recognized the value radio would be aboard ships, so he set up a number of shore radio stations to facilitate the sale of his equipment to ship owners. This particular Titanic copy came by way of an Australian amateur radio operator, VK2SAF, now deceased. He was a former shipboard operator who, as the story goes, was given a reel-to-reel tape by an American friend many years ago. The American evidently obtained possession of the original 12-inch mechanical recording, and there the history ends. Many ship operators of that era were former landline telegraphers who left their jobs to go to sea in the new field. They brought with them, along with the Morse code, the letters CQ, which was a general call to all operators on the circuit. In February 1904, the Marconi Company added the letter D to CQ, and CQD became the universal shipboard distress signal. In later years, an international conference decided on the use of SOS as a universal shipboard distress signal, and this was adopted in 1908. But old customs lingered, and British operators continued to use CQD along with SOS, probably to add emphasis to the fact that they were in big trouble. The Titanic message, as a result, contains both CQD and SOS. We will play the recording three times, first at the original speed, and then at progressively slower speeds for those of you working on your code practice. The slower speeds will also enable us to more clearly study the characteristics of the operator sending, or as is known in radio circles, his fist. Here is the first playback. 'The rasping character of the dots and dashes is typical of the so-called spark transmitters used in those days, before the advent of the more modern vacuum tube. To understand a spark transmitter, one has only to remember the so-called static noise heard on an AM radio when a nearby electric motor, such as a vacuum cleaner, is running. The static is caused by electrical sparking of the motor. Amplify or increase that sparking thousands of times, interrupt it with dots and dashes, and you have a crude transmitter that can be heard for many miles when connected to a suitable antenna. Ham radio operators in that era made their own spark transmitters using the high voltage coil used in Model T Fords for spark plug ignition. Coupled to an antenna, the Ford coil made a dandy, inexpensive, low-power transmitter. Returning to the recording, there are several very remarkable aspects to this message. First is the relatively high speed at which it was transmitted. Secondly, the message is letter perfect. Even highly experienced operators make mistakes sending fast code. But this operator sent perfect code under the stress of being on a sinking ship. He was further handicapped by being unable to hear, as he states in his message, and which we will go into later. The recording was evidently started several seconds late, because there are several transmitted characters before the first CQD. Starting with this CQD, however, there are a total of 80 characters in the message. At 5 characters per word, this produces 16 words, which were transmitted in roughly 37 seconds. Allowing for possible small variations in recording speeds, this works out to between 25 and 30 words per minute, a very respectable pace by current operating standards. Some experienced radio operators listening to this recording have expressed doubt about its authenticity, because it just sounds too fast. It has been suggested that the recording itself could have been speeded up. That possibility exists. However, in that case, the man's voice saying 1912 would have taken on a higher pitch, because increasing recording speed also increases the recorded audio frequency response. It has also been surmised that the operator used a vibroplex, or semi-automatic key, to achieve the high speed. Before examining this possibility, we should point out that the standard instrument used in those days was called a straight key, or sometimes a hand key. The operator created dots and dashes entirely with a vertical movement of his fingers and wrist on the key. Such keying was highly individual, because each person developed his own key handling habits, which, as previously mentioned, was called his fist. Fists could range from almost perfect to unreadable. The physical effort of flexing fingers and wrist for extended periods while sending readable code required extensive practice and timing. Operators incapable of sending good code were snidely said to have, quote, glass arms, unquote. The vibroplex, reportedly invented in 1905, was a semi-automatic key which produced a string of dots by means of a vibrating lever. One of the limitations of the straight key was the speed at which the human hand could produce dots. The vibroplex, in the hands of a skilled operator, overcame this limitation because the device could produce dots at a very high speed. Really skilled vibroplex operators could attain speeds in the 40 to 50 word per minute range. However, emphasis must be placed on the words skilled. Novice vibroplex operators generally ended up sending gibberish. The question then becomes, was the Titanic message sent on a vibroplex? We do not know if the 1905 invention found its way to shipboard use by 1912. It should also be mentioned that some communications organizations frowned on the use of the vibroplex because of the terrible code produced by inexperienced operators. The United States Navy, for example, required radio men to pass a sending test with the vibroplex before permitting its use. The Titanic message was sent by John Phillips, the 25-year-old chief radio operator who perished in the sinking. If the sending sounds too fast, let common sense dictate that if you're on a sinking ship, you're going to get that distress signal out as fast as you can. And if you can bang out readable code at 25 words per minute, that's what you'll do. To appreciate the skill needed to send readable code at 25 words per minute on a straight key, consider that more than 50 years ago, one of the FCC requirements for an amateur radio operator's license was the proven ability to send and receive code at 10 words per minute. This was later increased to 13 words per minute, which was considered excessive by some. Quite a few amateur radio applicants, were unable to qualify at this speed. In later years, the FCC created a higher class of license called Extra, which required a code capability of 20 words per minute. Anyone qualifying as an Extra was considered a highly skilled operator. John Phillips' error-free sending at 25 words per minute on a straight key is a feat that few operators of today could duplicate. Primarily, this is because the straight key has gone the way of the buggy whip. Any code operator who is serious about sending good code today uses an electronic keyer, which churns out perfect dots and dashes at any desired speed. But again, considerable practice is required to master this device. Time now to replay the message, this time at a slower speed. At this speed, we can better identify the characteristics of Phillips' fist. Some of his dashes are a trifle short, but in general, the characters are well formed and the sending is crisp and clean, easy to copy. It is doubtful this code was produced with a vibraplex. One of the characteristics of vibraplex operation is the difficulty of controlling the automatic dots. Consequently, even the more experienced operators sometimes produced an extra dot or left one out. Considering the stress under which Phillips was operating, it is unlikely his message would have been letter perfect had he been using a vibraplex. However, that is an individual opinion. An oscilloscopic examination of dot length and spacing could determine if they were produced by a hand key or a vibraplex. Finally, let's slow the message down one more time and listen to it again. We will now read the message and then explain the parts that are not plain English. After the man's voice saying 1912, There are four characters at the beginning which sound like I-T-S-A. Then comes C-Q-D, O-M, D-E, M-G-Y. Position 41/46N, 40/14W. Sinking. Cannot hear for noise of steam. D-E, M-G-Y, C-Q-D, S-O-S, C-Q-D. Now the significance of the letters I-T-S-A is unknown. After the first C-Q-D come the letters O-M, which again are somewhat of a mystery because they're clearly a part of the message. One guess is that they are an abbreviation for, quote, official message, unquote. Shipboard protocol dictated that the distress signal was to be sent only at the direct order of the ship's master, so perhaps the OM was included to make known this fact. Then come the letters DE, which are radio abbreviation for the letter from. This is followed by MGY, which was the Titanic's radio call sign. Position is given as N north and W west, but only in degrees and minutes. Today, ships' positions are detailed in degrees, minutes, and seconds, affording a higher degree of location accuracy. The statement, cannot hear for noise of steam, is open to speculation. Possibly the ship's engineers deliberately released steam from the boilers to prevent an explosion, but this is conjecture. The letters DE and the ship's radio call sign are then repeated along with CQD, SOS, and CQD. The message ends. As we wind up this fascinating saga of radio history, it seems appropriate to point out that never again will any ship send out an SOS by way of dots and dashes. Computers, satellites, and other electronic marvels have replaced the Morse code and the radio operator. After serving for more than 100 years, the Morse code, once a vital communications medium, has been relegated to the scrap heap of obsolescence. It remains now only as a plaything for those radio amateurs who still cherish the lost era of dots and dashes. But one must perhaps question the wisdom of the international community's decision to abandon the Morse code. How will we communicate worldwide when the next great war produces atomic blasts whose electromagnetic pulses may well knock out the satellites? Will the few remaining and aging radio amateurs who know the code be called on once again? History may eventually give us an answer.